These voices made headlines this week.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear.
I can't help but be a little emotional and sentimental, and I'm human like anybody else.
Gary Mark Gilmore is dead.
Voices in the headlines, the sounds of the news this week, gathered from around the world by the staff of ABC News. I'm George Caldwell, ABC News, New York. Thursday dawned bright and cold in Washington. It was the day the power and prestige of the United States government would pass from one man to another. It was Inauguration Day. Jimmy Carter had spent two solid years working for this goal, from peanut farmer to governor of Georgia to president of the United States, one of the most incredible political accomplishments ever attained. The day before, he was in his hometown of Plains saying goodbye to the people who were boarding a train headed for Washington, a train named the Peanut Special.
I know everybody who's going to Washington on the train will have a good time. I believe it's going to be a new day, a new beginning, a new spirit for our country. As I said when I came home after being elected, you're my friend. You've helped me get elected to be president of the greatest country on earth. If you get in trouble in Washington, don't call me. I'll have my hands full tomorrow.
ABC's David Garcia talked to some of the passengers about their reasons for going to Washington.
Well, this is probably George's only chance in 100 years to get a president, and we think we ought to be there. We ought to support a neighbor. That's the way Georgians are.
It's a historical occasion for us and our two boys, 15 and 13, and we'll probably never in our lifetime have another president from our own community, so it's real important that we go.
Why are you going up to Washington? Why do you want to be there?
What do you think I want to go for? I've got to see Jimmy.
Temperatures were in the low 20s early Thursday morning as a crowd gathered at the Lincoln Memorial for a prayer service. There were hymns by the choir and some words from the father of Martin Luther King.
14 years ago, my son stood here and delivered his great speech on I Have a Dream. Little did I know that I would even be living to be here today, and certainly wouldn't expect to be doing this, not standing here.
The crowds made their way to the inaugural stand as the noon hour approached and heard Chief Justice Warren Burger administer the oath of office to the 39th president.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute
the office of President of the United States.
The oath was taken, and President Carter began his inaugural address with a touch of graciousness.
For myself and for our nation, I want to thank my predecessor for all he has done to heal our land.
President Ford, standing again, he just shook hands with President Carter after Mr. Carter so graciously gave that wonderful opening line. Carter walked over to him, extended his hand, and now the two men shake hands again.
The event correspondent Bob Walker described was recalled by Gerald Ford later in the day as he flew from Washington to California.
I don't deny I got a little sentimental, but I tried not to expose it and keep it within myself. But we've had 2.5 great years, and you can't help but be a little emotional and sentimental, and human like anybody else.
The human touch is what President Carter lent to his inaugural message.
The world itself is now dominated by a new spirit. Peoples more numerous and more politically aware are craving and now demanding their place in the sun, not just for the benefit of their own physical condition, but for basic human right.
The new president promised the cooperation of the United States in that pursuit.
We are a strong nation, and we will maintain strength so sufficient that it need not be proven in combat. A quiet strength based not merely on the size of an arsenal, but on the nobility of ideas. We will be ever vigilant and never vulnerable. And we will fight our wars against poverty, ignorance, and injustice. For those other enemies against which our forces can be honorably marshaled.
The point Mr. Carter made about nuclear disarmament was later called heartening by the Soviet Union.
We will move this year a step toward our ultimate goal, the elimination of all nuclear weapons from this earth.
Mr. Carter concluded by voicing this hope of what people might say following his term in office.
I would hope that the nations of the world might say that we had built a lasting peace based not on weapons of war, but on international policies which reflect our own most precious values.
From the solemnity of the inaugural address to the gaiety of the inaugural parade and the feelings of the man picked as its Grand Marshal, Senator Hubert Humphrey.
I think it's wonderful. Really and truly, it is. It's delighted both Mrs. Humphrey and myself, and we're eternally grateful to President Carter and Mrs. Carter for the honor that they bestowed upon us.
The new president broke with tradition, and instead of riding the parade route, he walked it.
I told the Secret Service about 3 weeks ago that I was going to walk all the way.
And did he protest?
No, they said if we kept it quiet, they thought it would be all right, but if it got a lot of publicity, it might not be good.
But nothing went wrong, and the mood of the day was summed up by a visitor from New York State, Richard Herring.
I think it's probably one of the nicest days that somebody could spend outside. The people from all over the world came out today, traveled thousands of miles to get here, and it's something possibly is a once-in-a-lifetime adventure for a lot of people.
Sharing in this adventure, the man sworn in as Vice President, Walter Mondale.
It was partly joyous, because it was a great day. It's a sobering experience to realize that you're about to become the vice president and you're standing next to the next president of the United States, and that within a minute or two it's all going to take place, and all the problems and difficulties ahead sort of close in on you, and you realize that it's an entirely new life that you're undertaking. But I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful, but it is quite an experience.
The day gave way to evening and the start of seven inaugural balls. The Carters danced to the music of Glenn Miller at the Shoreham Hotel, but there were the sounds of rock and country and western, too, as the president and first lady made their way from party to party. At the one in the visitor center, Mr. Carter invoked a bit of nostalgia.
6 years ago, this month, I was inaugurated governor of Georgia, And we had four inaugural balls, not nearly as many as we have tonight. And I had a date with the same woman, and she wore the same dress. How many of you like my wife's old dress?
And so the head of the new administration celebrated his triumph while his predecessor relinquished the trappings of power. ABC's Joe Templeton was among those watching as Gerald Ford said his last farewells.
Here at Andrews Air Force Base, Gerald Ford is rejoining the troops for the last time, a special honor guard assembled here as he leaves Washington after serving 2.5 years as President of the United States. Mr. Ford now passing the color guard, moving on to the various units representing all branches of the service.
Then the final tribute as Mr. Ford boarded his plane. Ford was leaving Washington after 28 years of public service in the House and in the presidency, leaving for a new home in California, but leaving his options open that he might run again in 1980. His son, Jack, told ABC's Barbara Walters his feelings about that.
I'd probably vote against it if we took a family poll.
Why?
I think that, first of all, he secured his position in history. He's made a tremendous contribution to this country. And great personal sacrifice both to our family and to himself personally. I'd like to see him enjoy life, get away from the pressures on a day-to-day basis and do some of the things that he and mother haven't had a chance to do.
On board the plane, Mr. Ford talked with reporters about leaving official Washington.
We had prepared ourselves and we certainly took the attitude that our time had ended and President Carter's time had begun, and I said to him that we wished him the very best and that I was available to help, and if he wanted to call me otherwise, we would do whatever we could to be beneficial.
In one of his last presidential decisions, Mr. Ford ordered honorable discharges for about 700 military deserters who served in Vietnam and were wounded in action or decorated for valor. But he stopped short of granting blanket amnesty to deserters and draft evaders. That was left to the new president, and on Friday, Mr. Carter wasted no time in fulfilling a major campaign promise. He ordered a full, complete, and unconditional blanket pardon for Vietnam draft evaders. The question of what to do about deserters and those who received less than honorable discharges will await a government study. In issuing his order, President Carter said he understood many people would either think he went too far or not far enough. Last-minute appeals were made and rejected, and this past Monday, a firing squad in Utah carried out the orders of the courts and the wishes of a convicted murderer. An official at Utah State Prison, Ken Scholson, got the formal notification by phone.
The order of the 4th Judicial District Court of the State of Utah has been carried out. Gary Mark Gilmore is dead.
One of the few people who was at the execution was the man who bought the rights for Gilmore's biography, Lawrence Schiller.
The warden was polite and firm and to the point and asked Gary what his last words were, or something to that effect. We could not hear exactly. Gary looked up for an extended period of time, then looked directly, and I believe his words, at my distance, I understood them to be, "Let's do it."
Also witnessing the execution, Gilmore's uncle, Vern D'Amico.
Gary, my nephew, he died like he wanted to die, in dignity. It was very upsetting to me, but he got his wish. He did die, and he died in dignity.
Gilmore had been convicted of killing a man named Max Jensen. In Provo, Utah, Jensen's father said justice had been served.
I believe that justice is dependable, and the due process of law has been followed here, and I feel that the law should be upheld in this case.
The execution of Gary Gilmore is the first in 10 years in the United States. During that time, the merits of capital punishment have been under constant court review and public argument, reviews and arguments that are certain to continue. As the week started, it became clear that the nomination of Theodore Sorensen to be the new head of the CIA was in trouble. The attacks, which Jimmy Carter called groundless, came from a number of sources. One of them was the new head of the Republican National Committee, William Brock.
It is unbelievable. The man would be offered the post of the top intelligence job in the entire free world, having stolen documents that were classified from the United States government, published a book based upon those documents, and then I gather turned these papers back over to the government and taken a tax deduction for it.
The Senate Intelligence Committee opened hearings on Sorensen's nomination on Monday, and it was at those hearings that the nominee threw in the towel.
To continue fighting for this post, which would be my natural inclination, would only handicap the new administration if I am rejected, or handicap my effectiveness as director if I am confirmed. It is therefore with deep regret that I am asking Governor Carter to withdraw by designation as Director of Central Intelligence.
On Saturday, the Washington Post said retired General James Gavin would be named to replace Sorensen. 10 Carter nominations have cleared the Senate, Only those of Griffin Bell for Attorney General, Ray Marshall for Labor Secretary, and Joseph Califano for HEW remain for confirmation. Scientists at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta announced Tuesday that they think a new germ caused last summer's so-called Legionnaire's disease. But as Dr. Charles Shepard points out, there is still a loose end.
We feel that this is a disease that was caused by a bacterium, but we don't know how the patients got it, but we do know that it didn't spread to any of the contacts, and they were of no danger whatever to their communities or to the family.
It's also thought the same germ caused a mysterious sickness that killed 18 people at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington in 1965. 29 people died from the Legionnaire's disease in Philadelphia. It may seem hard to believe, but the Labor Department says 1976 had the lowest rate of inflation in 4 years. Figures released Wednesday show that the Consumer Price Index in December was up 4.8% over what it was a year ago. And this country's consumer price inflation last year was the lowest for any industrial country except Switzerland and West Germany. Prices of gasoline could go up because of an order Gerald Ford issued this past Wednesday. Mr. Ford ordered the deregulation of gasoline prices to take effect on March 1st. The order is subject to a veto by either House of Congress. Another of Mr. Ford's last acts was to pardon the woman known to servicemen during World War II as Tokyo Rose.
Hello, you fighting orphans of the Pacific. House Strix. Sister's after her weekend and back on the air.
This is the voice of Iva Tacuri D'Aquino as she made one of her broadcasts in 1944. She was convicted of treason 27 years ago and served more than 6 years in jail. The pardon came on Wednesday, Mrs. D'Aquino's 60th birthday, a pardon she viewed as a vindication. Mrs. D'Aquino had always maintained she was forced to make the broadcasts. Cold winds of winter continued to sweep across much of the country this week, causing schools and businesses to close down and shortages in natural gas supplies. It used to be that you could always escape the cold by going south, but people in several parts of Florida saw snow for the first time this week. Listen to the reaction from these folks in Fort Pierce.
Well, it looks real white, kind of flaky, real nice.
It's snowing in the first time in my 40 years I've lived in Florida.
I couldn't believe my eyes. I told my husband he was crazy when he told me to come look out the window.
I don't know, it's just one of those flakes comes down. I've never seen it before, I'm a
Floridian. Snow also fell in Miami, and of all places, the Bahamas. Now compare that with what's been happening in Alaska. Last Wednesday, we got this word from Pat Poole, a meteorologist in Anchorage.
Since the first of the year, we've been running 15 to 25 degrees above normal every day.
But the freezing temperatures in the Southland are more than a novelty. They mean that a good share of the fruits and vegetables there will be killed, and that could cause higher prices in the north. Arthur Darling, who's with the Florida Citrus Commission, has this assessment of what will happen.
There will be California, Texas fruit on the market, and it's quite possible that the prices will go up on that fresh fruit that is on the market. There should not be any significant change in the price of Florida concentrated orange juice.
The commission ordered a 10-day shipping embargo on citrus crops starting January 24th. The commission says this is being done to prevent consumers from getting damaged fruit resulting from the freeze. Navy launch carrying more than 100 sailors and Marines collided with a Spanish freighter and capsized in Barcelona Harbor last Monday. Tugboats got the launch right side up and found more than a dozen survivors in an air pocket below decks. But others were not so lucky. Kent Harris of the U.S. Consulate in Barcelona said rescue crews had found many bodies.
At this moment, they've renewed the search efforts. They're dragging the harbor of Barcelona and there are some teams of divers involved as well, including Spanish teams. They have come up with a total of 24 dead.
That was early Tuesday. By the end of the week, 48 bodies had been recovered. In Egypt, price increases for food, cooking fuel, and other products touched off 2 days of rioting in such major cities as Cairo, Alexandria, and Suez. ABC's Bill Brannigan watched the police move in on a crowd in the Egyptian capital on Wednesday.
Echoes of tear gas canisters being fired, resounding through the streets of downtown Cairo this morning. Demonstrators who late yesterday began protesting a new round of price rises here in Egypt engaged police in a number of isolated skirmishes throughout the night and well into this morning. traffic has all but stopped into the downtown area. Many people apparently are afraid of coming into the area, electing to stay home today or find some other route to work. Police desperately trying to clear the streets to resume normal life here in this Egyptian capital. Bill Brannigan, ABC News, Cairo.
Some 70 Egyptians are said to have died in the rioting. Another 800 were hurt. President Anwar Sadat canceled the price increases, but the rioting continued. In 1970, a policeman was killed during a bank robbery in Boston. And this past Monday, the militant feminist and anti-war activist Susan Sachs pleaded guilty to manslaughter and armed robbery charges stemming from the incident. The prosecutor in the case, John Gaffney, was satisfied with the outcome.
I feel that justice had been served, that the defendant recognized the fact that she has to serve time, that she admitted her participation in the armed robbery and so much of the murder is charged as manslaughter, and that she's going to serve time.
Susan Sachs was sentenced to 12 years in jail. She'll get credit for the two she's already served. Students were attending classes in Langley Hall at the University of Pittsburgh Thursday when suddenly an explosion rocked the building. Shelley Dubin, a senior biology major, recalls what it was like.
Things started flying, and people started screaming and running out. And I looked behind me to see what had happened, and beams and cement and wood were falling, and people were just rushing towards me.
Two students died in the explosion. Another 45 or so were hurt. It's thought a container of gas in the basement of the building set off the blast. Thursday's ceremonies in Washington can make us all proud. There are few countries in the world where power is exchanged so smoothly. We were taken by what President Carter had to say at the beginning of his inaugural address, words which seem to put things in the context in which they belong.
This inauguration ceremony marks a new beginning, a new dedication within our government, and a new spirit among us all. A president may sense and proclaim that new spirit, but only a people can provide it.
And so went This World This Week and the voices in the headlines. Voices in the headlines, the sounds of the news this week, gathered from around the world by the staff of ABC News. Written and produced by Gil Lungen. Executive producer Tom O'Brien. Directed by Barbara Silber. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Clark Ranger. Special effects by Terry Ross. I'm George Caldwell, ABC News, New York. Voices in the Headlines is a production of ABC News.